Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
As the fallout continues today from the worldwide cyber attack, we want to look at one technology that has become crucial to how the internet and a lot of other things function. It's also a technology that experts warn could be vulnerable to hackers. I'm talking about GPS, Global Positioning System. It's the technology behind the mapping software on our phones, but it has become so widespread that it's now crucial to the majority of vital infrastructure sectors in the U.S., including our energy grid and our dams. Greg Milner writes about GPS in his book Pinpoint, How GPS is Changing Technology, Culture, and Our Minds. It's out this week in paperback. I spoke with him last spring and started by asking him what exactly we use GPS for.
It's almost easier to say what we don't use it for, but I mean, besides the obvious, our cars and our maps, it's used in aviation. Planes use it, all types of planes, from the smallest planes to commercial jets. It's used to guide ships. It's used even more than for positioning. It's used for timing, believe it or not. So it helps regulate our electrical grid. It regulates communications networks, cellular networks, landline phone calls. It actually helps regulate world time, actually keep clocks stable. And of course, it's used to track everything, everything living, and even probably some things that aren't living, animals, people, convicts, Alzheimer's patients. There really is almost no facet of society that is not in some way or another touched by GPS.
So a lot to go through there, and we will. But how does it actually work? It's just based on a number of satellites at this point, right?
Right, exactly. There's a constellation of about 30 satellites, although there are 24 active at any one time. And essentially, it comes down to being able to time how long it takes a radio signal to get from a satellite down to a GPS receiver, because the signal is traveling at a stable speed, the speed of light. By knowing how long it takes, and that information is contained in the information in the signal, our receivers can figure out how far away we are from a satellite. And if there are four satellites, at least, which there should be from almost every spot on Earth, a line of sight to four satellites, our GPS receivers can then figure out exactly where we are, on Earth or even above Earth in three dimensions plus time. And it can calculate that and then translate it to a latitude and longitude coordinates if necessary.
It's almost amazing to think that there was a time before we had GPS and the ability to do all these things, but it sounds like we have the military mainly to thank for having GPS.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. In that way, it's sort of similar to the internet in that it began as a military project. Specifically, it began largely as a way for the Air Force to figure out a way to drop bombs more accurately and more efficiently. That was the original impetus behind it.
And the Gulf War is the war where that really started.
Absolutely. I mean, especially in the ground war, the fact that Allied forces were able to barnstorm across the desert, the featureless desert, as efficiently and quickly as they could, was largely due to GPS receivers. And the Gulf War and Operation Desert Storm were really kind of like the coming out party for GPS. I mean, before that, it had been almost 20 years where only a small subset of the military even saw any use for it, believe it or not. There was a big turnaround in Operation Desert Storm where all of a sudden it was really impossible to ignore how useful for warfare GPS was.
So how did it go from being really something used in the military to something that civilians could use?
Well, from the very earliest days, there was always supposed to be a civilian component. A big step forward occurred in around 2000. Before then, the military had been purposefully corrupting the civilian GPS signal a little bit. In the early days, there were basically two signals. The U.S. military had its own GPS signal that only U.S. military receivers could use, and then everyone else used a civilian-grade receiver. To make sure that the civilian receiver wasn't as accurate as a military receiver so that the military would still have an advantage, they would corrupt the signal a little bit for civilians. They stopped doing that around 2000, and from then on, the industry really exploded because you could get almost the same amount of accuracy with a civilian GPS as you could with military GPS.
You're right. I think that there was an announcement from Bill Clinton that the military wasn't going to make it difficult for civilians to use GPS like they had been.
Yeah, there was an executive order in 2000, which had been a few years in the making. Another big milestone was in 1983 when the Korean Airlines jet that was shot down by Soviet missiles. President Reagan, in the aftermath of that accident, made an announcement that essentially said GPS is here to stay, it's for everybody to use, and it won't go away. It was, in a way, just telling the military, get used to it. Now GPS is going to be here for everyone forever.
One of the things that you said GPS is used for that I was surprised to hear how much it is used for is agriculture. Between 2006 and 2012, usage of GPS precision agriculture tripled around the world, is what you write in your book. How do they use it for agriculture? How does it make agriculture work better?
Essentially, as a category, precision agriculture is the idea of refining and making more efficient, you know, every part of the farming process. And not all of those processes use GPS, but a lot of them do, because basically, if you know exactly where you drop a seed and you know exactly where to put the fertilizer or the pesticide or the water or even how much water to put there based on soil maps that you have, it's incredible how many resources you save, and those things add up. So it really is, I mean, it's a difference in millions of dollars. Farmers, even small farmers now, are buying these precision agriculture packages that cost thousands of dollars, but they pay for themselves within a year or so because the savings really add up. So it's just this idea of making the process as efficient as possible. It's the kind of thing that sounds crazy until you really, at least for me, it did until I really thought about it. I thought, of course, why wouldn't you use GPS for all this? So it's a way of automating and making efficient, more efficient, the entire agricultural process.
What about GPS and the electrical grid? How does that work?
Well, the main way that GPS and the electrical grid works is that, above all else, GPS is an extremely accurate clock. I mean, no GPS readings would ever work unless we knew exactly how long that the signals took to get from the satellites to us. So consequently, those satellites have incredibly, you know, accurate atomic clocks on them. The way it works with the electrical grid is that because those satellites are visible from everywhere, you know, receivers spread out over a very wide area can all take the same signal, and so they can synchronize their clocks. This is used to take essentially a snapshot of the electrical grid at very precise intervals that can see the whole grid and what, you know, how much power is being used, how the power is being allocated, and it's becoming more automated, where eventually it'll be the case where the systems can take these readings and make changes in how power is flowing in the grid and to where and from where.
So a lot of things that GPS can be used for good, but GPS has also been responsible for some bad things happening in the past. You write that there was a woman in Bellevue, Washington, who drove her car into a lake that GPS said was a road. There are people who GPS directed into remote areas and they ran out of gas and food. How does this happen? How often does it happen?
Well, it happens often enough where, at least in Death Valley, you know, the park rangers there actually coined a term for it called death by GPS. It doesn't always have to include actual death, but it means this idea where people follow their GPS directions blindly. It'll take them down roads that are technically roads because they exist on some map somewhere that maybe is in the mapping software used by your GPS program, but they barely exist. They're only meant for vehicles that can go off road. They take you deep into the desert until you get lost and you can't turn around, or there's nowhere else to go. So why it happens is a very interesting question. It's the kind of thing I find, at least with myself, that it sounds incredible until you really start to think about how you yourself maybe use GPS and put lots of trust in it.
We rely on it too much, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we certainly rely. I think anyone who's driven with GPS kind of knows that feeling of just sort of turning off part of your brain, the cognitive map part, and just letting GPS do the navigating for you.
Well, how much do you remember about your environment when you use GPS versus when you use a map? Because there's been research done on this.
Yeah. I mean, the research shows that you tend to actually disengage from it the more you use GPS, because it gives you the ability to kind of maneuver through your world without having any contextual awareness of it, or much less contextual awareness of it. So it's really what it does is that, you know, it takes you out of the environment in a lot of ways. It lets you disconnect from it.
Well, one of the other things you bring up in this book, and this may not be surprising to people, is that companies these days are using GPS to track their workers. If you're a truck driver or whatever it may be, you may be being tracked by your company to make sure that you're being as efficient as possible, that you're staying on track. But now you also write that workers have figured out ways to get around this, GPS jammers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I knew these things existed, but one of the big surprises for me in researching this book was finding out how widespread these things called fleet management systems are, which basically a way for bosses to keep track of their workers. You know, any company or government agency that uses a fleet of vehicles now, it's pretty much has one of these packages. And so what people figured out is you can buy these little they're called personal privacy devices, but what they really are is GPS jammers. They create a little bubble around the person that jams the GPS signal, so it disrupts these fleet management systems. I mean, it's a serious enough problem where, for example, on I-95, New Jersey Turnpike, when it goes past Newark Airport, you know, it actually was interfering with the GPS landing systems that they were being put in place there, because it was so close to the highway that there'd be these little blips of distortion that would shut off the landing systems that were being tested, because there are so many of these things on the road. I mean, people really do not like to be tracked by their bosses.
And you can't blame them. That's Greg Milner, author of Pinpoint, How GPS is Changing Technology, Culture, and Our Minds. It's out in paperback tomorrow, and you can read an excerpt and hear more of our interview at hereandnow.org.